All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Like, I have a debt to pay to them guys. We're going to win a Stanley Cup for them.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Connor McSweat podcast. Okay, man, I don't know. Like, obviously, the Oilers beat us, so we can't beak too hard, but we can beak a little bit because they got swept. And as long, look, this wasn't as glorious as the year prior when the Jets swept them when we weren't even in the playoffs, because that was glorious to watch. You knew the Avs were probably going to beat them, even though in the back of your mind, you're like, well, you never fucking know for sure. Watching those four games of hockey was soothing, so soothing to my wearied Flames fan soul. I don't know about you, but seeing those fucking idiots lose hockey games is just so satisfying.
Yeah, that was like ointment on a freaking wound.
On an open burn, hey? That was like a soothing balm.
Well, and the fact that they blew game four in the way they did was like particularly satisfying.
I love how, I think it was Jay Fresh. It was some of the analysts were getting in on it, or the analytics guys were getting in on it. There was a meme of there with everything's going good. It's 4-2. Just don't make any. And there's a picture of Mike Smith in the corner about to play the puck. Why does he have to do it? That's why I fucking.
He's like a third defenseman back there. It's like, yeah, if you have a shitty third defenseman.
Yeah, exactly. He would be the worst. Analytically speaking, he's probably the worst defenseman in the league in terms of turnovers. Is he not? Oh, yeah, he's great back there.
Well, somebody posted, like, so they plotted on a graph the goalies in the playoffs this year, the retrievals per game and the percentage of retrievals that lead to a zone exit. So like the goalie gets it and it leads to the puck exiting the zone. Mike Smith leads all goalies in retrievals by a freaking mile, but he is the lowest in terms of retrievals that lead to a zone exit. So yeah, really good third defenseman back there. Can't get the puck out of the zone.
It's still fun. Isn't it still funny that there is no one in media on the broadcast, not one person that pushes back on the whole Mike Smith is great at playing the puck thing. Not one.
They're the ones who peddle it more than anyone. It's fucking insanity. Like Derek on the 960, like he'll die on this. Like remember when Smith was here and it was like Pinder was always like, he sucks and he keeps playing the puck and he shouldn't. And Wills is like, oh, he's so good at it. He's still on there going, oh, he's so good. It's a difference maker. Yeah, it's a difference maker for the other team. Like, I don't know how you can like, okay, he made what? Like one good play that led to a goal against us this year when handling the puck. But like every other time is like a terrible idea. And all the fans know it and everybody with a brain knows it. But the media is still, oh, Mike Smith, great puck handler.
It's like a third defenseman back there. What are the Oilers going to do with their goaltending situation? Because you got Mike Smith locked up for one more year. Thank God. And then Koskinen is his contract's done. So you think they're going to take a run at, they're probably going to have to do a 1A, 1B situation because they don't have a lot of money to spend.
Well, I can't. Yeah. I would imagine that Stuart Skinner kid is going to get, a shot at it. Cause based on what I know is from just Oilers fans in general who aren't morons, they're like, where's Skinner? Like, why isn't Stuart Skinner playing? Why they hate Mike Smith just as much as we do. So
you mean there are Oilers fans that aren't morons?
There's a few out there. I mean,
I've yet to meet them.
Pretty heavily skewed. But even the ones who are know Mike Smith is terrible.
Well, I was talking to another fan the other day who's like, oh, yeah, maybe Mike Smith will retire.
No, you do not know Mike Smith.
It's like, how do you not know this guy yet?
He will be.
There's never a goal ever in history that was his fault since he started playing hockey. How is this fucking guy going to retire? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, just out of spite, he won't retire. Out of spite, the first game he plays next year, he'll be in the freaking corner playing the puck. That's what used to piss me off so much. It's like, exactly. Hey, it's like, okay, you know, you fucked up. That's fine. Okay. Learn from your mistake. No, next. It's like in the Jerome McGinley game that he totally ruined. It's like, that's the epitome of it. It's like he gave away the puck on a goal that went in, and then 2 minutes later, he's like behind the net, like, not tending the net at all. And that was always the thing. He never learned from his mistakes because he's such a dipshit.
He's so just fucking stubborn. He's the most stubborn hockey player I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's not in a good way. Because he stubbornly sticks to doing things that he really shouldn't be doing.
So that was the fact, because that was the thing we hadn't seen yet. Because it was 4-2 and I was watching with some people and I was like, see, this is, I'm okay with this. Cause like, it would be really cool if they lost based on a Mike Smith meltdown, which kind of happened. So, that game 4 was just like, that was perfect.
God, that was delicious. Yeah.
And okay. did you see them doing the wave when it was 4-2?
Yes, I did. Edmonton. I did.
Holy shit. That's why you don't do the wave.
When they started to do that, I'm like, okay, come on. The wave should be banned in playoffs. That's the regular season thing. Don't you think?
Somebody DM'd me and said, because I posted the clip of them doing the wave, and somebody was like, as soon as I saw them do that, I like bet on money line that like that the Avalanche were gonna win. It's like, yep. It's yep. Voodoo.
It was, people notice it on social media and my texts. Like, it's a thing. And look, I'm a wave guy. When the time is right. As a kid, I always loved the wave. Still enjoy the wave. But I agree with pretty much all the fan base that you reserve the wave for when the game is in the bag. Not when it's 4-2 and was it second period or third period?
Third. It was 4-2 in the third, like 13 minutes left in the third, I think.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah, no. Playoff elimination game, give me a break.
Give me a break, Oilers fans. You're
so that was weird. Yeah, that was great. Like, and honestly, like the Avs would have freaking steamrolled us. I as much as I enjoyed watching the Oilers get shit canned for four games. It was just like the Avs are just like, they're the exact opposite of us, right? It's like they're down 4-2 and it's like, yeah, no problem. No problem.
Yeah.
We're going to win. We're going to score on the. They had more chances on, I think it was game four. I can't remember. There was a power play where they needed a goal. I think it was when they ended up that getting that Rantanen goal to go ahead, I think. Anyways, they had more chances in like 1 minute of one of their power plays than I think we had all playoffs on a power play. It was unreal.
Can you imagine having a decent power play?
Oh, man. They're just like, there's
so, too much to ask.
They're so okay, dialed
any,
in.
Did any of the Flames fans talking to Daryl on his way from Eau Claire Market to Calgary Tower mention, hey, why does the power play fucking atrocious?
Yeah.
Who runs that fucking thing?
Who's in charge? Because
well, you're right. Like the Avs, they did this all season long, and you really saw it in the Oilers series. We were good at this too. I mean, we talked about it quite a bit throughout the regular season as the Calgary Flames keep control of games. They go up. If their team ties it up, they go up again. If they're down, they don't let it get too far away. A lot of times they tie it up right away. Like the Avs were the extreme version of what we saw from the Calgary Flames this season in terms of they were in control of, what, 98% of that series? And when the Oilers had some sort of life, they instantly sucked it right back out of them. Like, fuck, that was so awesome to watch.
Yeah. And they're 12-2. They're 12-2. And I mean, sure, they got Nashville without their number one goalie, but they still freaking steamrolled them.
Well, that was pretty fucking... Daryl was right. That was a waste of 8 days.
Well, it was a waste of 8 days for the Oilers, too.
No, not for us. Not for us, it wasn't.
It was a great 8 days.
So let's kind of... I want to get your take on this. Because immediately, once the Oilers get swept, I and you and plenty of other Flames fans take to social media and rub it in the Oilers' faces. Oilers fans' faces. And there's a lot of, you know, it's not a slam dunk because they just did beat us quite handily, right? So they're there to remind us of that. But at the end of the day, I like how this is not an apples to apples situation, right? The Oilers franchise has been markedly worse than the Flames franchise, but they will not admit that. And on the contrary, they will actually try to, this is where they get delusional. Like you could try telling them, you could try showing that statistic that you like to share every once in a while. In the past 30 years, look it up, NHL.com. What is it, winning percentage in the last 30 years? The Oilers are the worst franchise in 30 years.
Other than the Seattle Kraken now, who just came into the league. So
the worst in 30 years. But no, we're the trash organization. We're the trash team because they won five cups with the best player, potentially the best athlete of all time.
Well, the thing I don't get is that I don't go seeking out Oilers fans. I like making fun of them within the Flames circle. Like, you have no idea how many Oilers fans are still, like, DMing me and, like, getting on my case. And, like, in like every time I open my phone, it's just like, where do you guys come from? Like, I don't know. I see Oilers fans making fun of the Flames, and I'm just like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
And how do you even have the fucking... Like, that's exhausting, dude. Like, right? You know what? When the Flames were beat, I took a few screenshots so I could go back and beat them when they got swept. And I started doing them like, fuck, this is exhausting. Fucking finding people? Like, come on. Who's doing this? Like, you have zero, you got nothing better to do.
There's right? A lot of them living in their mom's basement in their sweatpants with not much else to do.
Well, you just mentioned it. You're looking at some of the... One of our last few ratings we've got on our podcast on Apple in the last,
week or so? Yeah.
Since the sweep. Oh, we're getting all these one star. Our podcast sucks, blah, blah, blah. So, and you see it on these arguments you get into with these Oilers fans. Oh, yeah, nice podcast, loser. So, you know, it's, we trigger them enough. They're going on there. So if you're listening and you haven't, and you do like the show and you haven't left a comment, you better help us out. We're getting sued over here.
Yeah.
We're getting sued over here by the Oilers fans.
Well, and here's the last thing about Oilers fans, we'll say, is that here's what bugs me more than anything is like this sense of entitlement. Because I saw Ryan Whitney, who obviously big Oilers guy, he was talking about how, like, oh, this fan base and this team deserves it. They do not. Like, think of a team who has been handed more in the last 10 years than the Edmonton Oilers. Think of a fan base who has, like, okay, how many jerseys have been tossed on the ice in Edmonton over the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years? It's like every freaking season there's like a jersey toss, right? It's like, yeah. I can't think of a fan base or a franchise. You have Kevin Lowe, like, he's on there saying, like, yeah, the fans suck. We only like the rich fans. Remember when he said that? He was like talking about how the only fans they give a shit about is like season ticket holders. It was unreal. So, like, I can't think of an organization or a fan base who deserves success less than the Edmonton Oilers. It's like, hey, here's success. Be terrible. Get gifted great player, great pick after great pick after great pick. Piss them away and then get gifted the best player of all time. Piss it away for 5 years. Then he goes on a freaking tear for 2 rounds and wins you 2 series. Throw in with terrible signings and terrible moves and signing terrible people, and that's deserved of success. I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
And that's my whole apples to oranges point is you've been terrible for 30 years, the worst actually that there is. You've been gifted, as you mentioned, is it 4 or 5 first overall picks?
I believe they had 4.
4 in a matter of 6 or 7 years. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And then you get not only that, but you have Connor McDavid, the next Wayne Gretzky.
In a year where you weren't even going to, where you had to like get insane luck to bounce up to one. That's what's
the most amazing. And you're still, as of this season, only slightly better than the Calgary Flames. So you can, like, that's why.
You can fuck right off.
And you can fuck right off. And they'll never get it though.
Yeah, no.
If you try to explain it 6 ways to Sunday. They will. You could show them the stats. They won't. It's like they're not able to see reality.
It's funny because my mom's a teacher and she, a lot of Oilers fans are where we live, and the way she describes the kids who are Oilers fans at the school compared to the people I deal with who are like adult, the way you see like adult men reacting on social media who are Oilers fans it's very similar to how the children react. Like, I swear to God, this is my favorite thing that's come out of the Oilers losing. So I don't know if you saw Sportsnet and The Score both posted like the losers meme, you know, when you do the Oilers logo with the losers.
I swear to God,
the Edmonton Journal, was it David? What's his name? Dave Staples, maybe? Yeah, David Staples. He writes like this freaking, like, the dude is a 60-year-old man journalist for a professional newspaper, and he wrote like this freaking piece about how he's crying over memes, like legitimately upset with like Sportsnet and saying Sportsnet needs to apologize for me. Oh my God, it was unreal. That right there personifies Edmonton Oilers fans. That you've got the media who, yeah, Sportsnet's really anti-Oilers. Ron McLean almost cried after Game 4. He was almost in tears.
God, he was at Game 1. The offside.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
Okay, come on. I'm watching that. I'm like, whoa, that's definitely offside. Fuck, this goal's coming back. That's no good. And then they call it onside. I'm like, what the fuck? And then I just needed to explain to me once. That's it. Oh, okay. If that's the rule, then yeah, no, he doesn't have control of the puck until he gets foot into the zone, until, what is it, Nichushkin tags up. It's pretty clear. Don't look at the one angle. Look at the other angle. And then the Oilers fans are just fucking – this is the other thing. It's like the Coleman goal. That's a fucking goal. We got hosed. We got robbed of a Game 6, everybody. Robbed. So all these Oilers fans, beat you in 4, made quick work of you. Yeah, we also got hosed 2 games. Game 2, Puck probably, that should have been a goal. fucking just because the ref loses sight of a loose puck, we get hosed. I don't have as much big of an issue with that one as I do with the Coleman goal, because that's fucking that forces game six potentially.
Yeah.
And how the fuck is that? Whatever. It's not a distinct kicking motion, but then you go into game one against the Avalanche. And it's the same loser fucking media that's calling the Coleman goal a kick in. Oh, now this is definitely offside. No, it's not.
Well, compare Ron McLean's reaction from the Coleman goal.
Exactly.
To the freaking Cale Makar goal. It's like he literally, what was his quote? He was like,
it doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, it doesn't feel right. What?
What do you mean it doesn't feel right? You're a fucking ref. You idiot. The difference in those is this. I can't even believe it, dude. Can you? I don't understand. Okay. This is twice now in the span of 2 weeks where the broadcast, the media and the broadcast don't understand the rules of the hockey. And they're sitting on there. They're
dumbfounded.
They're dumbfounded because they're saying, oh, no, it's this, it's this, it's this. When actually, in reality, no, it's the opposite is what the rule is. How do you not even know? I can understand how I don't know as a fan. I mean, like you said, we watch a lot of fucking hockey. That thing out of the penalty box that the Oilers were complaining about in the series against the Oilers where Tkachuk comes out and then he scores. Is that game one?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a rule. You could pick your guy because I'd never seen it before. And this offside thing, something happened to us with this. Was it last season or something similar? But I just needed explained once. And then I realized, oh, shit, yeah, no, that's definitely onside. Wow. Makar, after the game, they asked him about it. And he's like, yeah, you know, I tried to push it ahead a bit because I knew he was coming to tag up. He even knew the rule. I don't understand how you're Ron fucking McLean. I guess he's reading too much poetry, eh?
Maybe but if he spent more time on the rule book and less time on his freaking
Keats and shit. He's supposed to give us the official's perspective on that panel, is he not?
Yeah.
Isn't all he's good for?
It's not that good for anything fucking else.
Dumb poetry and wanking off Connor McDavid four nights a week.
Surprised he didn't do a poem to close out like a poem he wrote about Connor. I'm sure he will next season.
That's right, working on it right now. Eh?
Yeah.
Just needs to get the Vaseline out and thoughts come pretty steadily for him.
Like Mr. Garrison in South Park when he's writing his autoerotic novel that turns like out to be really gay. And he doesn't know it.
Anyways, this I guess one of the most satisfying things of not having the Oilers have any success in the third round, zero success. There's no fuel for the circle jerk.
Yeah.
Even McDavid, like the media had to cover, they had to switch to Makar. Oh, you can't beat Makar one-on-one. Oh, McDavid's, if Taze and Makar are out there, he's pretty ineffective. That became a bit of the storyline. But for me, what I realized after just arguing with Oilers fans for four straight days is that from my perspective, from a Flames fan and my hate for the Oilers, it doesn't matter if you beat us, whatever. The fact that you guys were gifted four first overall picks and the second greatest hockey player, maybe of all time, potentially, when you already had the first one and you have nothing to show for it. As long as that continues to be the reality, I will be there rubbing it in your stupid faces because you don't deserve it. You didn't deserve it in the first place. You don't deserve Connor McDavid. I guess maybe you do because he's fucking greasy neckbeard zip face.
Well, the thing is too, I was pulling up old clips because when this was going around, and like I said, they deserve all the success. I was like, remember there's a clip from McDavid from like 2016 or 17 where he's out some restaurant in Edmonton with his family, his mom and dad. And there's freaking Oilers fans outside chirping him, telling him that he sucks, telling him he better pick it up or he's going to be traded. So they're a weird fan base, man. They'll turn pretty quick.
As long as you have McDavid and you're not winning, I'm just going to stay it right here. I will be there to troll you. I'll make that commitment to you right now.
So Calgary boy Cale Makar comes through massive in this series. How good is this guy?
Oh, man. See, now I don't even know where I'm at with the Avalanche, if I like them or not, because everything's so skewed because I was cheering for them so fucking hard for the last week and a half. Like, I don't know if I like them or not.
They've served their purpose. So right now I'm just like, I'm a just moderate observer. Like, if they win the cup, I'll be like, sure, that's cool.
No, I got a secret little spot for them now. I want to see them beat the Bolts.
Yeah, totally.
And I hope it is. I hope it is Tampa and the Avs. And I don't want to see the Bolts win, but
I hope it's Tampa and the Avs because the last time the Avs were in the Stanley Cup final is actually the last time that the two best teams in the conference, which the Lightning weren't this year, for all intents and purposes, though, they are, right? They're the best team in the East.
Yep.
So the last time the Avs were in the Stanley Cup final was 2001, where they played the Devils, who were the best team in the East. The Avs are the best team in the West. 7-game series between the two best teams in each conference is like, and that's what's weird about the Stanley Cup final in the past 20 years. It's kind of been shitty. That's what the first round is always really good. And then it kind of gets decreasingly good as each round goes on. And then the Stanley Cup final is usually like a kind of a letdown. Like it's always one, some weird team.
It's one juggernaut against just a dark horse.
Yeah. And which is cool. Like sometimes, like it's awesome when it's like the Flames come out of nowhere and make the Stanley Cup final. Like that was cool. It's cool when it's like, just, you know, like, oh, Vegas made it in their first year or stuff like that. Or the year J.S. Jaguar, like literally wheeled the Ducks to the Stanley Cup final and they lost.
Still wins the Conn Smythe. That was
amazing. Yeah, holy cow.
That was probably one of the best sports performances of all time.
Oh, all time. I still remember that poor guy getting that trophy and he just looked like, oh man, that was the worst. But it's very rare in the NHL. Cause remember it's like you had like when LA won their cups, it was like against New York and New Jersey. And then Pittsburgh won against like the Pittsburgh Detroit series were awesome. And I think the year when Vancouver played Boston was awesome. But outside that, the Stanley Cup final has kind of been weird. So that's why I really hope it's Tampa. Just I want to see freaking like best on best 7-game series.
Yeah. Yeah. Be epic.
What's your thoughts on the Oilers? Apparently they're done with Jesse Puljujärvi and he's not going to be an Oiler anymore.
So they have to trade him though?
So he's an RFA. So they'd have to trade him.
Well, I don't think they're going to make any deals with the Flames, do you?
But I very much doubt it.
Here's the thing. Kenny Holland is just a matter of time. Like, is this guy better or worse than Trelly?
Right, that's what I was going to say, because, like, everybody's all stoked for next year.
This is good. We have the Oilers right where we want him.
Like,
he's going to run this into the ground.
That's what I was
going
to say. Think of the moves Holland is going to make now that he thinks they're, like, close.
Like the Kane move turned out to be shrewd because you got him for hella cheap. Yeah. But now that's going to backfire. This is just exactly how things happen for the Oilers. Eh?
And he's going to make like you thought the Duncan Keith move was bad. And like, listen, I'm not trying to the Oilers beat us fair and square, but they beat us because they have the best player in the world, not because Ken Holland like constructed this great team.
Exactly.
So
Ken Holland decided that Mike Smith was the best guy for the job.
Yeah.
He's the guy that ended up, I don't know, man. His goaltending was pretty bad that whole series.
So all I'm saying is, like, in terms of next year's outlook, I'm feeling a lot better about where we're at than where the Oilers are at.
Yo, I will make you a hot take right now. The Oilers missed the playoffs.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Listen,
with guys scoring 200 points a season, yeah, they'll make it, but they're gonna have some struggles. They're gonna have some dark moments again.
Like McDavid and Drysdale have to be so on every game for them to have a chance to win.
Look at the strategy for the coach. It's like game four, you're rolling into overtime. I'm like, okay, how much is Connor McDavid going to play in overtime? How much has he already played? They throw the time on ice. he's already at 26 minutes. That's probably like, does he play? He plays defenseman fucking. Yeah, I mean, he plays a lot of power play time because he stays on for 2 minutes. But even still, man, like, when is this going to catch up with him?
All right. Like, and again, like, think about how their season went. They were in rough for a while.
Yeah, they until lost 7 straight.
They were like, there was a stretch in, like, I remember right before they played us and beat us, of course, where like the whole Koskinen thing was going on and it was just a nightmare. Yep. And then they just, Smith played okay and McDavid and Draisaitl took over. And I mean, sure, like Hyman was great for them in the playoffs. Kane was great, but he probably won't be there. It's just like,
dude, they're going to re-sign Kane. This is Kenny Holland's fucking bread and butter, dude.
No, apparently Kane's asking for like $7-8 million a year.
Dude, no one's going to pay him that. You think?
It's the NHL. I feel like.
So because the Oilers were the first team to give him a second chance, now it's okay for anybody to do it?
Well, you know what? Yeah. And here, Labardius actually made a really good point the other day. He was talking about Kane and how he's like kind of a piece of shit and has always kind of been a piece of shit and needs to mature. And this is going to work out good. Like he said, Kane needs to reward a team that took a chance on him and like, you know, like take less, stay with a team that helped you when you were down and out. And it sounds like Evander Kane is going to be like, do the exact opposite. So,
yeah, he would. What'd you think of the hit on Kadri?
Oh my Lord. I almost killed him. I swear to God. So many Oilers fans like dive.
Oh yeah.
Dive.
Yeah. He's still pretending to be injured for the
Stanley Cup. He's still pretending to have a broken thumb. That's just fake. But I like how Lucic got kicked out of that game for like breathing on Smith. And
here's the thing. It's just like, you reviewed both. This is what I don't get. You reviewed both.
Yeah.
The officials reviewed the Lucic hit and said, yep, that's definitely a game misconduct. Definitely. Then they review that one. They say, no, that's a five, but it's not a game misconduct. And then he gets suspended. So...
So
like the NHL really needs to address their
officiating. They need to figure it out. And they need to figure out the video review shit because it's so confusing. Anyways.
Does not a distinct kicking motion, dude.
Dude, give me a fucking break. Give me a break. I'm still like... Oh man. Anyways. Right. Watching Makar and Taves pick apart McDavid, or at least keep him in check, really kind of made it evident that the Flames deed... needs to, you know, here's the assignment for the offseason. Watch Cale Makar and Devon Taves play hockey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're listening to the Garbage Bag Day interviews. Darryl blows me away once again. Solid gold. It's like 12 minutes of gold. He it wraps up everything. It hits every point. But, you know, the very first question they throw at him is, you know, what went wrong. And he basically turns it around and says, not really about what went wrong. You got to look at the season as a whole, right? You had your preseason, you had your training camp, you had your regular season where you had some challenges. There's plateaus you work through. Then you had the goal was to make the playoffs. You did. And then what they did in the first round was something that most this team hasn't accomplished yet. But then he does say that the main thing he wants this team to work on first and foremost is conditioning. And fuck, do I agree with that? We could not keep up with the Oilers. And I don't even think it's so much a speed thing, although that's a bit of a factor when you have the fastest skater on the planet on your team. And after a while, I mean, you hear it all the time, right? When you have these superstars like Gretzky, Sidney Crosby, McDavid, they make everybody better because when they practice at the same speed and everybody is on your team starts adjusting to his speed, right? So that's why the Oilers are so fast, because they're following the fastest guy on the planet. Like, who's our fastest player? Dubé? He's not really the team leader, but
probably Dubé.
If your foot speed is in there, then your conditioning fucking better be. And I think that the conditioning let this team down. I think the injury is also you know, played a factor in that in this round against the Oilers. But dude, we got skated into the ground.
Yeah, the Oilers made us look slow as shit.
Yep, big time. It was funny because you come out of the Dallas series and you're like, okay, yeah, no, I get it. I agree now. Size.
Yeah, right.
And strength helps you win a series because that's what helped us win the Dallas series. Then you get to the round two and you're like, holy fuck, no, no. Yeah. It's about speed and skill. You know, we got skated. And then the Avalanche, same thing. Right, like they had the speed and skill to stop McDavid, and it was, it came down to speed.
Yeah,
right. Well, you were able to skate with him.
Watch Makar play McDavid, like you were talking about that play where he tries to go around him in game two, or maybe game one. It was like no problem, poked it away. That's how you played him all series and Taves too. They just broke up little plays in the neutral zone, were able to skate with him, able to not get burned by him.
I guess Shillington is the fastest skater, but he's got to hit the gym, bro.
He's got to rein himself in a bit.
Yeah, he's a bit of a wild stallion, eh?
Yeah, he's just like and a wild stallion who, like you said, needs to hit the gym, beef up a bit, be able to engage guys physically and not like fold like Bambi.
Exactly. Just like, he is kind of a Bambi, eh?
Just reel himself in. Like, who was I saying? Yeah, Drysdale can't stay on his feet because I don't know if it was because of his ankle sprain or whatever, but the dude is falling down like crazy in that
series. Well, he does fall down quite a bit.
But and then I was like, is there a player who falls down in the league more than Drysdale? And you're like, Kachuk.
Yes, Matthew Kachuk. Although he wasn't as bad this season.
No, he cleaned that up a little bit, thank God, because that drives me nuts.
Well, it's probably part of the conditioning thing. But I mean, you know, Daryl saying this conditioning, like, yeah, that makes sense. If this team was better conditioned, and he says it starts in the offseason.
Well, and he says everybody's going to get their plan and everybody's going to have their things sent out pretty quickly here. So
yeah, and then it's something you build on, yeah. Right? But like Toffoli stands out for one.
Yeah.
He probably would have been more of an impact player if he had.
Yeah, he was noticeably. Season. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he looks slow. Even Coleman kind of slowed down a bit. You know, you expect Mangiapane to have a little bit more burst in that series. But regardless, coming back to the last podcast, like this is something this team's going to build on. Like there's something in there in that interview that Daryl was talking about. You know, the conditioning helps the individual performances down the stretch. But he's just saying, like, what these guys did accomplish this season is definitely something that they can continue to build and move forward into, right? The organization as a whole. I love how he keeps bringing his perspective back to, it's not just the team in this one season. This is like the holistic perspective of the entire organization.
This is what's been missing, like, right? Because Tree Living, we said, it doesn't really have a vision. It's kind of like that manifests when, like, year to year, it's like, okay, well, now what?
Exactly.
Right. There's nothing. There's no foundation. There's just like, okay, well, I guess we'll try again next year.
And you're like, try what?
Yeah. Right. Like, you know, how you want to play? Oh, just like we did in the playoffs. You just got fucking steamrolled, Jeff. You can't build on that.
Yeah. He keeps bringing the fan base into it. Like, he is the interface with the fans now. We didn't really have that before. It's just kind of the media all jerking everybody off all the time.
Yeah.
So you're good, great coach. Yeah, we're good.
We're good now. Apparently, he went for like a walk between Eau Claire and like downtown and down to the 9th and stuff. I don't know.
It took 2 hours.
Wish I would have known. I would have been freaking down there following him around.
But yeah, he said it took 2 hours because he's talking to all the fans.
Yeah.
Who does that?
Right? He's coach of the people, man.
Exactly. So he's doing a lot of things on a lot of different levels for this organization. And well, this is totally what we need, man. He's going to point us back in the right direction.
And I think the thing that's incredible to me is like, and he said this a few times, they've asked him like, you know, like, why did you come back to Calgary? Like, why come back? And he was like, because I've been watching the Flames a lot and I could see them falling behind in the league and in where they were going. And I wanted to change that. It was amazing. Dude's just a straight up Flames fan.
Dude, he did it in one season.
Yeah.
That's why you win the Jack Adams.
Right. And that's why, like, I, again, losing the Oilers, the biggest kick in the nuts ever. But like, you can't not look at this season and not be absolutely stoked for what's coming next year.
Exactly. In the player interviews, probably the two best players to hear from were Johnny and Chucky. Johnny has really come into his own. I mean, he's always been a really excellent player, but he's really, I think, found himself and on a level that he hasn't in this league yet under Daryl Sutter. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I agree as like an all-round hockey player, person, individual as
well. Yeah, on and off the ice. Like before, his interviews were just like, kind of like not really saying much. And now he's starting to engage and, you know, explain more about himself and what makes him tick and whatnot. It's just not so cliche and surface, which is why we love Tkachuk. You get like the full depth of it all, the true honesty. I mean, Johnny's starting to develop into that as well. I mean, he's laying hints, right? At the postseason interview there, he was winking at the media, basically like saying, "Don't worry, I'll be back."
Dude, I swear to God, the internet is a wild place. If you go look at all the YouTube comments on Johnny's end of that presser you're talking about, every comment is like, based on his body language, I don't think he's coming back. His body language indicates that was his last press conference in Calgary.
So it's like all fucking Eric Francis burner accounts.
Seriously. I totally agree. His body language to me indicated, and his words, the exact opposite, right? Like,
without saying,
yeah, like,
don't worry, I'm coming back. He said, don't worry, I'm coming back.
He even said the thing that I think that to me was the most revealing. He said, look, he didn't say we're working on an 8-year contract. I'll have to watch it again or go find it. But he said something about signing an 8-year deal, right? The specificity of that, rather than saying sign a long-term deal or sign for a while, the Flames are the only team that can offer him an 8-year deal. He specifically said it looking at an 8-year deal. Right. So it's like, obviously he's already aware and already been thinking about it and already kind of has an idea of what way he's going. So
is that's something that I didn't know. So the current team, but they have to do it
before free agency opens.
But then the max term he can get as a free agent is 7.
Yeah. From any team.
Okay. So that's a little bit of incentive to have guys resign then, eh?
Well, totally. It gives you more money, more term, obviously. Like if the Flames offered him $80 million, so like 10 by 8, what would the next highest bid have to be? Like a team have to offer him per year to guarantee him $80 million. That's like almost $11.5 million per season, right?
Right.
So like how many teams can fit an $11.5 million that Johnny would go to this offseason can fit an $11.5 million player on their team?
Well, then they would
few have and to, far between.
It's not even about matching. They would have to outbid by probably quite a significant amount.
Exactly.
I mean, the other thing he says is like his fucking wife loves it here. This is his wife's home. And she's obvious. You saw the fucking,
you saw the Gaudreaus like every freaking game here.
Well, and you saw the little wives club fucking doing the yep. Jack Sparrow thing. Like they're all getting hammered together, like they're a little clan, dude. I don't see this guy leaving, man. And then you got the organization is probably gonna pursue him harder than they have anybody in the last 20 years.
Yeah, there's two factors here. Number one is Johnny, and like I don't get these people. Like, and again, I could be totally proven wrong if he leaves, because like it is a business, it is sports. These guys aren't children; they're not gonna be making like childish decisions. But based on everything we know about Johnny Gaudreau, this guy likes things the same all the time. Like the guy doesn't even have like sauce on his freaking meatballs, you know? Like,
yeah,
it's just like everything you hear about him is that I couldn't see him making like a big ruckus and like leaving Calgary, right?
No,
and just like leaving the team. Just like I cannot, that doesn't seem to be in his nature to just like have like a life-changing event kind of like that, especially considering how well the team did this year. And all everything surrounding on him, like,
well, look,
and based on his family, like his freaking sister has like called out Eric Francis before for like making shit up. And it's just,
I swear to God, dude, that Jane Gaudreau likes anything that's Francis related,
yeah,
she likes it.
Like, you look at that guy's tweet. You look at that guy's family and how much they're involved. Like Johnny even said, he's like, my uncle and my dad and my mom and my sister, they're all on Twitter, always tweeting about the Flames. And it's true. And I think you have to put stock into something like that for a guy who seems to be very family oriented. And I mean, to be honest, the Flames are kind of one of more of those organizations that, yep, especially under Daryl Sutter, he's talked about the importance of guys having their families there and how he loves like meeting their kids and meeting their families. And the Flames have always kind of been like this. They've always kind of been like a goody two shoes, kind of like goody guy organization, which has kind of hurt them in the past sometimes, you know, when you sign guys for reasons that end up not helping you on the ice just because like a guy's a good guy. But it has been a pretty staple organizational philosophy for a long time. So that seems like a perfect fit for a guy who was very family oriented with the team, was very family oriented. That's one side of it. The other side of it is the Calgary Flint. Like, this is to me the like be all end all in terms of the discussion of whether or not Johnny Gaudreau is going to leave Calgary is like, the Flames just had their best season in like 30 years. One of their best seasons in franchise history. Got to the second round for the second time in like 20 years. This guy scored only guy who scored more points than this guy was McDavid.
Both New Jersey and Philly suck.
Yeah, both. Like, there's no way this management and this ownership group is going to let a guy like that who puts butts in the seats on a team that's really good, that just gave them what, how many games of playoff revenue at home? Six games of home playoff revenue. Seven games of home
playoff revenue. Single-handedly.
Like, no way are they letting this happen. And then add on to that the fact that Brad Shirley, like, do you, like, imagine they lose Johnny Gaudreau, their best player. What are they going to do? They'd be fucked. So, to me, it's not even about Johnny. It's the fact that the Flames are like, they need this guy in the team next year more than any other team needs a guy on their team next year. So, it's like, this, to me, is a no-brainer for everybody involved.
Yeah, like you said, the team's relevant again automatically. I don't think Johnny's ever had a coach that he meshes as well with as Daryl, which is funny because it was going to be the exact opposite according to all the media when Daryl was first hired.
Yeah.
And I think
my favorite Daryl quote, sorry, in his presser, he goes, "Fans want honesty, hard work."
Yeah.
And they don't always get it from you guys.
Quite honestly. To the media. Like, honestly, watch. It's 12 minutes. You get everything. He hits every fucking point. Calling out the media. Because it's true. I mean, they ask him about Johnny, and he says, well, you already know what I think of him. You guys were the ones setting the goals for the team. I mean, he does go back to this goal setting thing where it's just like, I think it was Danny Austin asking about, you know, he brings up the Stanley Cup as a goal. And he says, well, it's 32 teams' goals. It's a goal for all 32 teams, which maybe it's not entirely accurate because if you're rebuilding, you're probably not trying to win this cup that year. But he makes the, he says, you can't hit long-term goals unless you have, you're hitting short-term goals. And that was one thing that he said he needed to change with this organization. They weren't doing that. And he says, you guys are the ones setting the goals.
Yeah, totally.
And I love how it's near the end of the interview. He's talking about, because it ties back into this whole Johnny Gaudreau conversation. And he's talking about building. And he says, you know, like, if you want to win the Stanley Cup, you have to repeatedly be making the playoffs again and again and again and again. And you could tell this is the ultimate bar he's setting for this organization, moving in this direction, right? And this is kind of like, as a fan, you're like, why would you let Johnny Gaudreau walk? Why would you got to lock both Johnny and Chucky up? You've always said this. You know, if you're the Oilers, you're, as long as you have Connor and Draisaitl, you got to go for it every single season. And I think we're going to get into a similar situation with the core that you have. As long as you have Johnny and Chucky, you got to keep going for it, because you never know, especially you got Daryl now. Like, you have some, you have a good fucking roster.
Well, that's that, right? What I'm saying, when like, okay, Brad Sheliving has to get, like, what are they going to do without Johnny Gaudreau? Like, this team is not built to win 10 years from now. This team is built to win in the next 5 years. Daryl Sutter is the coach of this team.
Yep.
Right? Like, you just signed Jacob Markstrom is going to be, he's not getting any younger. You just signed Blake Coleman. Like, don't get all these people who are like, yeah, let Johnny walk and like save the cap space. It's like, no, this is win in the next few years mode.
Yep. And,
honestly, you really would let Johnny Gaudreau walk. Like, this is seldom people that I see, but it's out there a little bit where like, oh, let him walk, use the cap space. It's like,
for what?
You would, exactly, for what? Like, what do you want? Did you watch this year? It was fucking awesome.
For what? Another 100? What? How many points do you have?
115 points.
For another 115 point guy?
Like
you have this, two?
Yeah.
Do we have to remind everybody? You had two players in the top eight in scoring in the league, up there with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Both of whom are American, and like,
let's let them both walk.
Getting them to stay would be an incredible feat in a small market, a huge small market win. And you have people going, yeah, let them walk. I swear to God, if the social media era existed back in like the early 2000s to mid late 2000s, you'd have people being like, get rid of Jerome Iginla. He's a bum. Let him walk. He's the problem with this team. I swear yeah, that's what it would be like.
Probably.
So, like, come on. This team, did you not watch this season? People, like, there have been two seasons the last 5 years that have literally saved me from not being a Flames fan. And it's the 2018-2019 season when they were awesome. And it's this past season after they hired Daryl Sutter and were awesome. And these guys are awesome. And like, you don't mess with something, like, not even mess with something. It's like, we finally have something here. You can't tell me you've watched this team play the last 5 years and don't think there's something here that can be, even if you just watch this year, they have something here. They have, like you said, the guy scored 115 points. Why are we even talking about this? Like, they have a legit nucleus of guys here. I keep seeing another thing is like, oh, the Flames don't have the top end talent. What do you mean? The Flames have one of the guys, the only guy who outscored him was Connor McDavid. So, like,
And even
like, this is absurd that we're even talking about this.
Looking at Johnny's underlings, he fucking is better at McDavid at quite a few things. Yeah, like, he can do things McDavid can't.
He's a different player and does different things. And
plus, he just fucking silenced all the critics with the game 7 overtime clinching.
It's like, I just don't get, I guess it's just social media and everybody has their opinions and shit. And, but come on, like, there is no better time. And everybody, like, I don't know how you can dispute this. There's no better time in the past, probably 40 years, to be a Flames fan than right now with where we could be headed.
Well, the big thing is, like, Daryl came and stopped a sinking ship. That's basically what happened. And part of the reason why this ship was sinking is you did have a lot of potential. Right? You saw it in 18-19.
Yeah.
You saw it in 18-19. And then they could not figure out how to move forward. That's never going to be a problem as long as it'll probably reach its, you know, point at some point where, you know, it'll be time for Daryl to move on. But in these next 2-3 years and seasons, it's like, Daryl stopped the sinking ship. He made all the repairs on where all the holes were and stuff like that. He's buttressed a bunch of stuff. He's made additions to stuff. The ship is now sailing quite well.
Yeah.
And now it's all about, he's going to set the mast and get you in the direction where you want to go, right? And not only that, but the ship's carrying a fucking little, you know, smaller ship behind it, and in your farm team and the development going on. It's like the whole thing, the whole organization has been turned around, like, big time. And that has, you know, Daryl has a lot of support around him, but he is the fucking guy leading this shift. Like, without him, I'm not sure where we would be right now. And I mean, for all the reasons you just rattled off, I think the biggest thing is, you're right, dude. It's the vision. Because that was the biggest thing that you were always like, Brad has no vision. Because, I mean, it kind of comes back to this thing where Daryl's like, yeah, of course the goal is to win the Stanley Cup, but that's not the vision. Like, you got to have the steps to get there. And all these amateur coaches that we had before Daryl is just like sinking the ship further and further, putting us in the opposite direction further and further. Daryl's completely changed that around. Because of that, Johnny and Matthew probably want to, like, they're down because they can sense it. They can feel it. They know that the organization is going in the right direction currently. And, you know, I mentioned on the last podcast, but not only do you have a successful season, you know, as a whole, I still chalk it up that's a successful season for me because you can build on it.
Yeah.
And part of you building on it, if you're Daryl Sutter, you can now communicate with Brad and say, look, this is our areas of weakness on our roster, right? You know that Daryl's going to continue getting the most out of the individuals and continuing to bring that all together, getting the most out of the whole. But you also know that Daryl knows where you have weaknesses, right? And he can go to Brad and say, look, we need more of this type of player. We need this. Let's say we need this type of player on the third line. We need a little bit more of this on the back end. I am concerned about the power play. It seems like maybe that's his fucking kryptonite. But regardless, you know, the whole thing and the vision thing goes two-way with Johnny, right? Because that sells him, I think, right? You can see the vision for this team for the next 6 years. If you have Johnny Gaudreau locked up for eight, the vision for this team for the next 5-6 years is pretty clear. You're going for it. You're going to continue tweaking and building, but you have a competitive team. If you can replicate what you did in the regular season, you're there's a lot of people picking the Flames to win the Cup. The analytics suggested that they were probably there's a good chance the Flames could make it to the finals. I mean, you got to get past the juggernaut Avalanche, but if you can replicate that and keep building and tweaking, and these guys can keep building on their individual performances, then this team could be competitive for the next, compete for a Stanley Cup.
All right, that's it. Compete for a Stanley Cup. Because yeah. look at the Avs for how good they've been in the past 5 years. This is only the first time they've been past the second round, right? Since like forever. Takes a while, you know?
It's a process.
But you got to be there and you got to be one of the best teams in terms of all those metrics every single year and be one of the most competitive teams. I mean, if you look like a team like Boston, it's weird. Like, how could, like, I don't think anybody would dispute that the Bruins are a class organization and one of the best in the entire league. And they've had a hard time, like, in the playoffs the past while, right? I mean, just fired their coach, and it's hard. It's hard to win. The way you win is to be one of the best teams in the league year to year.
Yep.
And having a guy like Johnny Gaudreau when he scores 115 points on your team every year sure helps.
Well, the other thing that Daryl mentions too is having, you know, the age group of players. And look, the league's gotten younger. But if you're going to look at Stanley Cup success, I mean, the drivers for those players are in the later, you know, the 26 to 29 range, right? And he keeps bringing it back to that as I think he understands that. I don't think he's too old school. I don't even think he may have a slight propensity to play the older players, but probably because he knows that those have to be the drivers to take you deep into the playoffs. right? Like, you're not going to get, sure, you're going to get the flash of the Cole Caulfield every once in a while. It always happens. We saw it with Bennett. We saw it with Ferland. But what did they do in their, in the seasons after that, right? So he knows, like, the secret, like, the bread and butter to go deep in the playoffs is you having that core group that have been together for a few years that have been building in the right direction. That's basically what he's saying. And I mean, that's why I think what you're saying is you can be excited right now because you have something good going on. And if you can lock up Gaudreau, lock up Tkachuk, get Mangiapane signed. I mean, you've been saying that it's not that hard because people are freaking out. But I don't know, what pathway do you see this happening where you can lock up these three guys?
Well, it starts with Johnny, obviously, because he's the, and that's the thing that everyone, I don't even think there's as big a like time press as everybody kind of seems to be freaking out. Cause it's kind of been funny. Like Frank Saravelli's been making the rounds. He keeps saying like, if this gets to July 9th, July 10th, July 11th, July 12th. And then I keep commenting like, well, what if he gets to July 1st or July 2nd or July 3rd or July 4th or July, it's like all these weird arbitrary numbers these people keep throwing out. It's like the fact the Flames have the other guys, it's not like they have four unrestricted free agents pending right now. And they have to like, oh, we got to get this all done right now. They have one. They got to get Johnny done. The other guys are under team control. Those guys don't have to be signed like immediately. I mean, sure, you'd like them to be signed sooner than later. But I don't think it's like, hey, we got to sign Johnny by June 11th. Because if we don't do that, then we can't move on to Tkachuk and Mangiapane and Shillington. It's like those guys are all under team control still. So I don't think this timeline is as tight as everyone like might be kind of like freaking out about. But it does start with Johnny because what Johnny gets is going to – Johnny is the most pressing because come July 13, he can leave and go to another team if he wants to. So you get him done first, then you go from there, I would imagine. I imagine Tkachuk is – because the report is the Flames are going hard at Tkachuk and Gaudreau right now. Obviously, I don't really know why that needs to be like newsworthy, right? Like people are like, oh, it's, they're going hard. It's, of course they are. They're the two best players and they both just had a 100-point season and then they need contracts. So, I mean, I would expect them to go hard and do a full court press on Gaudreau and Tkachuk. But I would say you probably see Gaudreau sign and then you work on the Tkachuk one, try to get him done. And then you work with the other guys, Mangiapane, Shillington, stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe somebody goes to arbitration. I don't know. But I imagine the two big boys get done sooner than later. Like, I mean, the Flames have like $27 million in cap space. If you project that Gaudreau and Tkachuk are getting in the 9.5 to 10.5 range, and Mangiapane is getting in the 5-ish range, that certainly makes things tight. And it would certainly help if Milan Lucic would retire or you could trade Sean Monahan, but it is all doable. All
you think
doable.
A general manager of an NHL hockey team, wow, and this is his job, could listen, figure out how to do it.
Brad has known this has been coming for a long time, obviously. So there's obviously every.
Why plan. Doesn't that ease my mind?
See, in years past,
we've been prepared for the expansion draft for three seasons.
Oh shit, we lost
it coming. Uh oh, uh oh, we lost shit. We lost our captain.
Lost our best.
What happened? Man. It was a last minute decision, you know. No, you had 3 years to prepare for it.
So there's two. Hopefully, this goes better than that. There's kind of like two scenarios I see. Like Johnny's gonna get locked up, obviously, max term. Tkachuk is a bit more interesting to me. I mean, if I'm Matthew Tkachuk's agent, I'm pushing for like a 5-year deal type thing, because. I mean, you got to think he's obviously getting $9 million because that's his qualifying offer. I would imagine he's pushing for more. But if you sign an 8-year deal and you're Matthew Tkachuk, that takes you to what, age 32, 31? He's going to be 25 in December. So like 33 even. That might be limiting your earning potential if you're Matthew Tkachuk. Because unlike Johnny Gaudreau, I don't know if Matthew Tkachuk's game is going to stay at a elite level for the duration of his entire career, skating specifically. So if I'm Matthew Tkachuk, I honestly wouldn't even mind this if it keeps the dollar at a reasonable price, because if you're Tkachuk, you're probably, aren't you pushing for like 5 years? Take you to, then you get a chance at UFA again, or at UFA before you're 30 or when you're 30. So I don't know, maybe the Tkachuk contract looks a little different than we expected to, and maybe it's more along like the Matthews type where he signed like a 5-year deal. I guess he was younger when he signed that, but I wouldn't be blown away if Tkachuk signed a bit of a shorter term deal.
What are the chances of Johnny and Chucky pulling a Parise and a Suter and getting matching?
Whew, hopefully it works out better than those deals did.
Yeah. Right. So your thoughts on Coleman, you obviously heard the comments that Coleman has been in Johnny's ear, right?
Yeah.
Talking about building a legacy, leaving a legacy behind. And if you haven't, you're listening, basically Blake Coleman. I can't remember who reported on this, but it's been being talked about. Coleman is obviously trying to convince Gaudreau to stay here. And, you know, part of the things he's pushing now is, bro, you have an opportunity to leave a legacy behind. I mean, you've seen, and that just means one of the best franchise players of all time. You've seen it in Anaheim. Getzlaff had opportunity to go win a cup. He chose to stay. This is different. You're not choosing to stay on a shitty team. You're choosing to stay on a good team. But there is something to be said that players like that notion. You know, Kane and Taze are doing it in Chicago currently, where they remain on a shitty team. Right? It's just like, I guess it's different when you've actually won something there. But regardless, I think that might appeal to Johnny as well, might appeal to his family as well. They just seem like they're really happy with Calgary. But your thoughts on that? Because that was kind of another little thing getting thrown out there.
Well, I think that's cool coming from a guy like Coleman. I think they like Coleman's a U.S. guy too, so him and Johnny are probably buddies from. Not that everybody who plays in this who's born in America are like best friends and shit. But didn't they play on a team together at one point? Maybe a world championship team or something? I can't remember. But coming from a guy like Blake Coleman, I think Johnny, like you said, he's matured. But I think at the same time, leaving Calgary has never really been like something that's top of his priority list. And I think based on what Craig Conroy said about Johnny Gaudreau,
Because I haven't even listened to that.
Yeah, you got to listen to it. There's an episode of 32 Thoughts of Elliot's podcast where they interview Conroy. And there's a lot of really good stuff in there just about like how they signed Johnny initially and some other stuff from like 2004 and shit and some stuff on Cale Makar that was really cool. It's from like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was right before the playoffs started. But Conroy's on there going on about how like Johnny is a really competitive guy. He hates losing. But he also really likes shit like records, and having a franchise record is something that he like actually kind of like values and likes. And I mean, listen, Craig Conroy spills the beans on a lot of things.
Yes. Much, I think, to the detriment of to the chagrin of the organization. I think they would like him to be a little more tight chested, right?
Yeah. And something that was funny, I remember back the first time, back when the first Johnny Gaudreau contract freakout was happening, when they had drafted him and he was in college and they had to give him his entry level, and everyone was like, he's not going to sign. He's going to pull Adam Fox, even though this was before Adam Fox pulled an Adam Fox, but he was going to pull the move that college free agents can do or college players can do, and they become free agents, and he's going to sign in Philly or some shit. And Craig Conroy was one of the voices of reason, and he actually flew out to see Johnny, and they got the deal done pretty easily. So I don't know. I find it interesting to hear things from Craig Conroy talking about Johnny Gaudreau in that light, when he seems to be pretty plugged in with what Johnny's like. He's been there throughout Johnny's tenure as a Calgary Flame. They seem to have some kind of rapport. I don't know. Apparently the franchise record thing does matter to Johnny Gaudreau, according to Craig Conroy. So,
well, he just seems to be the type of guy where there's loyal. He values that loyalty, right?
Yeah.
He's more on the side of the loyal player that'll stick with you.
Right. And it's, I don't even know if that's even like, oh, Johnny Gaudreau is like a freaking loyal warrior shit. More than it's just like, he likes things to be the same.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. I just feel like he's that kind of guy. Like, I can't see him pulling a move or he's just going to like completely uproot his life. He likes stability. It seems to me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. I agree. Seems that way.
And dude, like Coleman's right. If he stays a Calgary Flame for the next 8 years, he will be the greatest Flame of all time. Especially if he wins a cup, he absolutely will be the greatest Flame of all time.
Well, I mean, like Monahan will be a different conversation. But as of right now, he's got his two best buddies in the world there. Fucking Lindholm and Monahan.
Yeah.
That used to be me.
I mean, he lives in the same apartment as Tkachuk. They're best buds.
Well, yeah, they got to be getting real tight.
Like, there's some other American guys there. And again, not that all Americans are freaking best buddies, but I mean, the Sweden guys are a bit of a group. So are the American guys. Hannafin's there. Chucky's there. Right? Coleman's there.
Absolutely. What about Monj? I mean, Monj, to me, has zero interest in leaving this, what's happening here. That's my opinion.
Monj seems to be a bit of an interesting one because they have played hardball with him in the past. His past two contract negotiations have not been, they've been contentious, I think. Well, they've been contentious. I know we've long wanted them to lock him up on a Lindholm type deal. And now it looks like they're probably going to have to pay him more than Lindholm. My thinking on the Mangiapane one is like, okay, if Brad did want to do this in a way that he can save a little bit of money while getting Gaudreau and Tkachuk locked up, he could do Monge on a shorter term deal and risk losing him in like 1 or 2 years. That's an option. I think that definitely is an option given on how they've negotiated with Mangiapane in the past. And given that money is kind of tight, it wouldn't surprise me if Tkachuk signed a shorter term deal. I would suggest this maybe is off the table, but I don't know. Mangiapane is what, 26? He'll be a UFA pretty soon. So given that they've had contentious negotiations in the past where the Flames haven't really budged, the onus has been on Monge to take less and prove himself. And boy, did he do that this year. I wouldn't be surprised if even Mangiapane was like, yeah, I'll take a 1 year, 2 year deal. And then I'll cash in 2 years as a UFA who's like a triple 30 goal, double 30 goal scorer. So I don't know. I'd like to see them get him locked up. The Flames, if you're the Flames, you're probably saying, okay, well, we can't make more than Lindholm, who makes 4.85, but market value, you'd think Mangiapane makes more. You look at, I think, who's the guy in Seattle that signed that contract? Jared McCann. You look at Jared McCann's deal as probably kind of like a comparable. He signed a 5-year, $25 million deal. Kind of in that same age group, kind of in that same production range. So that's probably what Monge is looking for, I would say. Kind of like that 5-year, $5 million number a year. It's going to be interesting. He's the more interesting one to me because Tkachuk and Gaudreau, you know what they're going to get dollar wise. You know, Gaudreau, if he's staying, is going to get long term. You assume Tkachuk.
I honestly think Gaudreau is going to sign a fucking max term, dude.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So Mangiapane is the one that, okay, maybe it's different. Maybe it's, I don't know what to expect as much from the Mangiapane one in terms of dollar and in terms of term.
Well, and like you said, he's going to be a little bit of the afterthought anyways. So they may not do exactly what they want to because they might be forced into
doing. Exactly. They're going to be, they could be exactly
whatever they can do.
Yeah.
Now my question then is, if you're looking at that, I mean, that's your top six there. Everybody's, you know, accounted for. We already talked about, we decided we better keep Backlund. I mean, you still have the same sentiment, keep him on.
Yeah.
Then if you go to the third line, you already got the fully locked up. He's going to be well conditioned. You let your Iron Croc walk. Unless he
wants to take like really low salary.
And maybe that turns out to be a benefit, right? What was he making before?
I think he was still pretty cheap. He was in like the $2 million range, $2 million even.
Because maybe you sign him to let's do one more year. You know, you finally started getting settled in the last period of the season. So maybe
that last shift you played was pretty good.
Yeah, that last
finally
the last thing you ever did, that was okay. But maybe that works out to the Flames' benefit. Because I mean, you do hear this, and I am predicting Coleman's gonna score more goals next season. I think he'll be the case where, yeah, it actually took him a year to transition. Yeah. You do hear that some players, they take a season after being traded to really find their feet.
Hey, folks, the pursuit for the Stanley Cup is on, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unreal offer for the most exciting playoffs in sports. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $100 in free bets, no matter what, win or lose. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win and get $100 in free bets, no matter what. That code is THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details.
So maybe it's the same thing with Yarncroc. I mean, obviously the dude's a better player than what his
production. And again, if you watch the games, you saw there was some potential there. He's super fast. He's a fast guy. Maybe you don't want him at center. Maybe he's better suited on the wing, but he's a useful player.
So there's going to be some question marks around that third line. Obviously, Dubé stays. He'll take another step forward. I think out of everybody, I'm also going to make a prediction for next season that this season for Dubé was like a one step back in order to take two steps forward next season. Because if you talk to Daryl, if you talk to Dubé, I think by the three-quarter mark of the season, Dubé was finally on the same page. Where he was like, yeah, you know what? I need to learn how to play the right way. Right. You started hearing it coming from him. And then you started seeing more flashes of it more consistently. So I think Dubé might have a fucking breakout season next season. But my biggest question mark right now, because like you said, we already know what's going to happen with Johnny and Tkachuk, or at least what they're going to try and make happen. There's a little bit of question mark around Mangiapane, but Sean Monahan, this is going to be interesting what happens because, yes, what was he make? 5.5?
Sean makes 6.375.
6.375. That's a hefty amount right now for somebody that doesn't even fucking play on your lineup, that worked himself out of the lineup. Now, how much of this was due to injury? Because on one hand, you say, okay, well, we could really use that cap space to A, get the signings that we need to get done and make some improvements to the roster. But on the other hand, let's say you're Bradtree Living and you know something we don't with regards to Monahan's health status and ability. Because one thing you got to take into consideration is the whole team was given a training program last summer. First time that these guys have had it. You saw it have an impact, but Monahan was probably just rehabilitating. He wasn't necessarily training, conditioning himself for the season. He was probably more so rehabilitating, right? Then in the midseason, you hear something like, well, it's pretty typical for these hip surgeries that it takes a full season of recovery, right? So they're kind of saying, it almost sounded to me like Brad and the management are looking at Sean and they weren't necessarily expecting the results to happen so much this season, but fuck, was there next to no results at all. So there's definitely concern there, but maybe they're thinking that they pulled him out early this season. Was he doing another surgery?
Well, he just had surgery, yeah, like in May or whatever.
So I don't know, man. Like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, do you trade him to free up cap and just be done with him, or is he the guy that has a bounce back season, scores 30, even if he scored 20 to 25 goals, you know, in a mid six role, but fuck man, he showed zero signs of anything, zero signs of life, essentially.
And like you said, he had every opportunity. It wasn't like Darryl just like put him fourth line right away. He worked his way out of the lineup.
Like, and he didn't even work himself just to the fourth line. He worked himself out of the lineup. Yeah. Out of an NHL roster. That's what he did this season.
So I know he's buddies with Gaudreau, and maybe you're like, hey, well, if keeping Monahan helps get Gaudreau to sign, maybe.
Then trade him away after.
Yeah. Like, I think, honestly, probably the ease. I don't know. There's a few options. Obviously, you can trade him, but he's got a 10-team no trade list, and who's going to want him without a sweetener is one thing, right? The thing we know is that the Flames have tried to trade him before, so it's not like they haven't explored this before, right? Like, remember when Josh Anderson got traded to Montreal? It's like the Flames tried to get Anderson for Monahan.
Apparently, the Oilers are looking at him, man.
Yeah, it'd be a perfect fit for the Oilers.
Let's get more
expensive, offense, big, less and injury prone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, even I think there was a report the Flames were in on Hampus Lindholm, who ended up going to Boston. He was an Anaheim defenseman.
Yep.
He's and good. The Flames were trying to get him apparently at the deadline, and Monahan's salary would have been involved in that somehow as well. So yeah. All to say, everybody who thinks like, oh, you can't trade Monahan because he's Johnny's best buddy, blah, blah, blah. It's like they've tried before, right? That's definitely on the table, is to trade him. It'll just be like, if you can do it without like having to throw in, hey, we have to give you a second round pick as well.
Yeah.
You could buy him out. That would save you $2 million next year. Or no, it would save you $4 million next year.
What does it save you this year?
That's what I mean. It'll save you $4 million this upcoming season, which would be huge. It would cost you $2 million the next year, which is kind of okay. It's not the worst buyout you've ever seen. But it probably wouldn't be the top way to do it. And then if you just keep him, like if you keep him, then what?
Then he better be fucking, I don't know, man. Were you out of this guy? He just worked himself out of an NHL lineup.
I don't know where.
Throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, it's hard.
I mean, you feel for him because you know what the type of player he can be. And it seems like he's just fucking spiraled.
Well, and especially for us, we've been vocal. Everybody, a lot of people have given us shit for like, why you like Monahan's done. Like he sucks. And we've been very much like, no. He'll be better. He'll be better. And it's like, okay, he wasn't better this year. Okay, he'll be better next year. Okay, he wasn't better next year. He'll be better next year. Wasn't better. So, man, he'd have to have a colossal turnaround to be better next year.
And maybe he needs that change of scenery
maybe, to do that. Right? So I don't know what he brings if you end up keeping him, other than that he's like Johnny's buddy and Johnny likes having him.
So what do you predict will happen? Or, like, you know, you look at it. That whole exchange between Monahan and Johnny after Johnny scores the OT winner, you know, there's kind of two sentiments there. There's just kind of like, oh, those are the bros, right? Like that was the Flames of the past. And maybe it's time to move on. Yeah. Like what's your prediction of what will happen? What do you think is going to happen with Sean Monahan?
Well, my feel is that the Flames prefer to keep him, but they might not be able to. Right, like Brad does have a bit of an issue letting go of guys for sure.
Except for Gio,
yeah. Except for Gio, he's just like fuck you, Gio. The thing with Monahan though is like I would say yeah they'll trade him, but like to where? That's the thing. Brad Treliving is not gonna pay a huge sweetener to Arizona and say hey yo we'll give you a second round pick or we'll give you a good young prospect to take Sean Monahan off our hands. I do not see Brad Treliving doing that unless it involves
Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah, unless there's like an actual hockey deal to be had with a team like Arizona to take a guy like that, I just don't see that happening. So maybe Lucic just retires and we don't have to worry about it. And then Monahan's contract is done after next season. That's what makes this a little more interesting. Is like it's not like Monahan signed for two, three more years. This is the last year of his deal. So
maybe you just say, okay, this is the last go at it. We can afford to keep you because we made some other money go away or whatever. And this is it.
All right. Well, let's go to the fourth line. What are the chances of Lucic retiring? Or you think he's got one more year left in his contract?
I don't know. It seems like he should. And you see guys like Getzlaff, Dustin Brown, guys who have probably more utility than Lucic. They retired, right? I mean, you look at his numbers down the stretch, he was not very good.
I mean, was he effective this season? Yeah, he was.
In very short spurts at certain times.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess here's my swaying question for you is, if he retires, is your team better or worse?
I would say it's better. I know a lot of people will be like, oh, you need Lucic. It's like, yo, I love Lucic. He's a great guy. He makes a lot of money. You're better.
And I'm not even saying just from subtraction, but what that $6 million frees up allows you to do, you should be able to make your team better, right?
Well, listen, I think we all watched Adam Rzeczka play a chunk of hockey this year and could all probably draw the conclusion that, yeah, we'd rather have him in the lineup over Milan Lucic and Brett Ritchie on a lot of nights.
I mean, that was one other thing that in the closing interview with Daryl, he mentioned, right? The whatever the question was, I can't remember, yeah. But it was alluded to, you know, look how well Stockton's doing, yada, yada. And Daryl says, yeah, you know what? Now we know we've had a good, we've been able to see who could potentially make the team next year, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe that's why you didn't see a lot of call up action. We'll see what happens next season. I probably Pelche is still probably not quite ready. He probably benefits playing another season in the NHL. But I guess coming back to the fourth line, is this the end of Brett Ritchie?
You'd think so.
You got to think that experiment's over, right? Because you know Brad's going to add two more 13th forwards before next season starts, anyways.
You'd think Brett Ritchie's not on the team next year.
Do they bring back Richardson?
Dude, I was going to say this. Daryl mentioned him by name. It was in his Jack Adams. He did a little thing with Brandon Parker. He mentioned Richardson by name. This was like 5 days ago. I think Brad Richardson's coming back.
Well, dude, like, I don't know if I have a problem with it. Like, Lewis ended up being probably one of your top three or five most valuable players in the playoffs. That guy was fucking awesome.
Daryl loves Brad Richardson. Like, I've heard him talk about him like many times after he was claimed. Like, way more than once.
So you think Rzeczka makes a team next season?
Oh, absolutely. I think. Well, you know what? Daryl made a good point, right? Like, Shillington came in. He's got to earn it, right?
Yeah.
He said, you got to do what Shillington did. He came in and he freaking earned it. So he does have to play well. But I mean, based on everything we saw this year, he's a slam dunk to be on the team next year, you'd think.
Where the fuck does Valimaki fit into all this?
Yeah, you've got to think he's on the team, right? Like, how else? What else? What do you do unless you're trading the guy or something, or he's playing another year in the minors? His non AHL salary is what, $1.5 million. So it's actually a little more expensive than you might think to bring up a guy from the farm, right? So maybe he does play in the next season and stuff.
Have you tracked his numbers at all? Like, is he? I have no idea.
I haven't.
I don't know where this guy's at.
Dude. No, me neither.
I know he's not wearing a silver helmet currently, but
yeah, I watched.
Or was it a golden helmet?
It was gold. I've watched him stalked in playoff games, getting killed right now, but. I hadn't watched very much in the season, so
the good old Josh Levo redemption.
Eh? Fucking Josh Levo, he should still be on the team. Sign Josh Levo. He scored that game winning goal. So Josh Levo, if you didn't watch, scored the game winning goal the other night against Stockton, just despite the Flames.
Yeah, he deserves it.
Long time listener, you know we love Josh Levo, and he got the short end of the stick when he was under Jeff Ward.
Yeah, we fucked him over big time.
Yeah,
so I guess we should look at the D real quick. Gabranson and Zadorov are the only two.
Yeah, they're the only two UFAs. So top four is probably going to be the same. You got to sign Shillington, obviously.
does Zadorov take less at this point? Is he still gonna?
I can't see him taking less. Can you? 27-year-old UFA coming off career year.
He's probably gonna want to come back, dude.
I don't know. Even if he does, I don't think he's coming back. Money. And you know what? I kind of get the vibe Darryl wasn't particularly stoked on that bottom pairing down the stretch. Yeah. There's a few instances he kind of mentioned it.
That they regardless, I still trust that the back end will get better in the offseason.
Yeah, and I like Zadorov just fine, but like even from a cap perspective, you just probably you can't make it work. Not even probably. Like you'd have to bring him back at like way like on the open market. Like I said, guy's 27, just came off a career year. UFA, he's probably getting 4+. Like yeah, you can't. I don't think there's any way he come unless he's really loves Calgary and wants to take like $1 million. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I think most was there any player that seemed unhappier?
No, I think they all had a great. Great year. I could see. Ryan. I think Gabranson could come back though. Maybe if you give him a 2-year deal, he takes.
Well, if, you know what? If Lucic retires, I think you gotta keep them both.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't want to lose any of that. We like beating the shit out of people. Although Zadorov's not much of a fighter, but he's pretty bruising.
I do like when they kill other teams, but it'll be interesting to see. Like, dude, that was one of my favorite parts this year was like
murdering people.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like, how many hits did he have this year that were just like, holy fuck. Andre Kasha probably still doesn't know where he is.
Yeah. He ended his season pretty quick. Yeah. Eh?
So, I don't know. I can't see him coming back. It is going to be interesting.
I think that's probably where he broke his ribs, to be honest, though. I think that was, yeah. Well,
I like Zadorov, but it's going to be impossible to bring him back.
Where's DeBrincat going to go? Can we get him?
Dude, why don't we get a horse face?
Billy Arby?
Yeah.
The Bison King?
I don't understand why Chicago's trading to Brinkett. What are they doing? He's awesome. I don't
know, man. Do these guys have a vision?
Apparently not. Honestly, the Flames, like, who did we say they should get the other day? Oh, Max Domi. Max Domi would, if you trade Monahan and ended up getting, like, Max Domi, a line of Max Domi, Mangiapane, and Toffoli would be sweet.
Might be epic
because Domi's a really good playmaker, and I think that's what you noticed with Toffoli. He lacked when he was playing with a lot of the guys on the team. He needs to play with somebody who can get in the puck.
Okay, man. Well, so what are our important dates coming up here? July 1st is free agency.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I have taken like a zoom out and haven't really been. The Oilers got swept, and now I've just been like full happy. No hockey mode. I think free agency is actually on the 13th this year.
Which would make sense for Johnny's dates.
Yeah. So, yeah, the draft will be on the 7th of July. So, that's coming up. We didn't even mention that Darryl won the Jack Adams because, like, of course he did.
Well, it was funny. The reporters asked him. Those 2 hours that he spent with the fans from Eau Claire Market to Calgary Tower. Did anybody mention the Jack Adams? Nope. So that's the way it should be.
Yeah. And he says, you know, like he wants the younger guys to win it. Gallant. He's such a boss.
Love it.
So the last possible day for the Stanley Cup final is June 30th. Draft is on the 7th. And then unrestricted free agency begins on the 13th. So. It's going to be freaking wild.
Okay, are you going to take Avs or Bolts? Assuming the Bolts.
I'm going Avs. Okay. It would be like, honestly, it would be cool if Tampa Bay three-peated.
Yeah. I agree.
I can't say that wouldn't be awesome.
Well, especially if they beat Colorado. Because the last, would they beat Montreal?
They've had two lame. They had the bubble and then they had Montreal.
And who did they play in the bubble?
Dallas.
Oh, come on. Dallas, Montreal. Like, yeah, this would be a hell of a three-peat if they pulled it off.
So, and I mean, as much as the Lightning pissed me off, like, I don't know if there's a team I still like. Still watching Kucherov play hockey is still, I think he's still my favorite player to watch.
Kucherov point if he's going to make it back, but
he's so
all good. Right. If you're going to go Avs, I'll go Bolts just so that There's two different.
I mean, the last time there's a three-peat was what, the Oilers?
Dude, the 80s? Don't even speak that, please.
Sorry.
Can you edit
that? I got to look that up because you know what? I don't even know if they won three in a row because didn't they go two and then we won? No, we didn't win one.
I think they Montreal won. I think they won three in a row.
NHL
four in a row, didn't they?
They won five total, but I feel like they won two and then Montreal won one when we went to the final and then they won two again and then we won and then they won. I'm going to look it up real quick.
Stanley Cup three-peats.
Because come on, three-peat. Because you've had who's two-peated? Pittsburgh's two-peated. They are a two-peat. Obviously, Detroit back in the 90s, but it's so rare. Like the Oilers, two. Yeah, see, the Oilers never three-peated. So the Oilers won a cup in 84, 85.
It was the Islanders, dude.
Yeah, so it was the Islanders in the 80s who were the last three-peat.
There was a four-peat.
Yeah, it was a four-peat. And previous, the Canadians had four-peated. So, dude, I kind of am kind of hoping they pull the three-peat because that would be pretty cool.
And then it was the Leafs in 1962, 63, 64. This was the last time they went around. Poor Leafs, eh? They go to Game 7 against the Lightning. And fuck, man. That's a hard draw, eh? That's your reward for what they? How many points did they finish with?
They had like 111-ish.
They had home ice advantage.
Home ice advantage. Dude, the freaking Rangers have home ice advantage.
Yeah, that's fucked.
Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
Yeah.
But that's that thing. It's just like you're that good. Of course you're going to make the playoffs, but you can't finish first every fucking year, man. That's a grind. Yeah, that's 82 games, right? Anyways, you take the Avs, I'll go Bolts, assuming they get past the Rangers.
Yeah, seeing Mac win would be sweet.
Yeah, you know what? I got a little place in my heart now for Makar and McKinnon after beating the Oilers.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing thoughts here? What's next for us? I guess we'll have to throw some content out there before free agency.
Yeah,
I guess
we'll see how Johnny finals. See what happens with Gaudreau and shit. We could do some fun shit for once instead of breaking stuff down all the time. The thing is that people don't get, you're going to see so much. You've already seen it. So much Johnny Gaudreau bullshit. I'm not saying he's going to 100% sign here, but we are seeing it every day, right?
He's 98% good to sign.
Yeah. There's a new bullshit report about him. Don't fall for the bullshit. Just stay strong until it happens. Just ignore the bullshit. There's so many clickbait shit out there. Ooh, Johnny Gaudreau linked to New Jersey. Johnny Gaudreau linked to Seattle. Johnny Gaudreau, is he going to, it's like, just ignore the shit, enjoy a few weeks off, and when Johnny signs, we can all just put this shit behind us.
But everything about this city I love, and like I said, my wife loves it here. You guys can tell on Twitter, my uncle, my dad, my mom, my sisters, you know, brother, you know, everyone loves Calgary, and it's a special place in our heart, and we love it here, so we'll see what happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.